to a new week. I have a good friend of mine who also does a podcast. He loves to refer to these as a brand new, sparkly, shiny new week. I'm not nearly quite so ebullient about that. That's great for your dictionary. Go running for it. Look it up. Ebullient. I can't even pronounce it. But either way, it's a brand new week. We head into Thanksgiving, which probably will challenge most of us, not only because it's a holiday and we're being told to hunker down and do as little social gathering as possible. But all of that aside, I want to take some time to reflect on a variety of things that is part of what is called the Psych Monologues. It is a podcast that's devoted to exploring our journey toward wholeness and living in truth and grace, at the same time trying to look at and embrace the profound mystery of our relationship with God, with ourselves, and with each other. I am Dr. Ray Mitch, your host. It is my delight and pleasure to be with you for these few moments on a Sunday evening. This has been percolating in the back of my mind. It was there even as I was doing the episode last week, as we were talking about the allure of certainty. And it's something that has been there all along. I mean, I was looking at it. We're in our 42nd episode, and I was looking at this, and I started way back in April, which was right on the heels of us getting kind of detained and interred as a result of the spike in cases and deaths and the devastation that was a result of this pandemic. And even then I was talking about some of the things I want to kind of reiterate or look back at. But what I'm looking at this as is what I want to try to lay out and raise people's awareness and kind of sensitivity to what I call the personal landscape of a global pandemic. And a phrase has been playing in my mind because of the interactions I've been having with people, where we are getting down to the last month of the year. A lot of people are saying good riddance, be done with 2020, as if 2021 is always going to be better. I hope that's the case, but that hope oftentimes blinds us from the reality of what it might be, since we don't know what it is. We'll just fill in the gaps. But I guess the phrase that came to my mind was this year is death by a thousand cuts. And I'll explain that in a second, but I wanted to change that to grief by a thousand losses. And I want to unpack that because it's been twisting in my head for a while. Now, let me say something about this phrase, death by a thousand cuts. And as one of our more profound contemporary philosophers of our time put it, saying goodbye is death by a thousand cuts. Flashbacks waking me up. I get drunk, but it's not enough because I can't pretend it's okay when it's not. It's death by a thousand cuts. Yes, that I impressed myself with the fact that I found something by Taylor Swift, and we all know how profound and philosophic she is in all of her music. And yet, and I'm not trying to make fun of it, that being that as it may, I think a lot of times artists end up putting into words that which we oftentimes don't articulate. And I think this actually touches on something so true that I couldn't pass it by, even though I'm putting a little facetious spin on it. And saying goodbye is death by a thousand cuts. And we have had a lot of goodbyes to things that we just assumed were always going to be true. They just weren't ever going to change. And so her song is really about that. It is the nature of trying to let go of something and pretend, like she says here, pretend it's okay when it's not. I just can't even get it in my head that I'm quoting Taylor Swift, but be that as it may, it is, like I said, I think the artists that do song and poetry and other things of that sort end up kind of tapping into something that oftentimes remains unarticulated in our minds and our hearts. But let me tell you just a brief background to that. So Death by a Thousand Cuts, actually, the phrase comes from China. Ling Qi is a process that is probably the most torturous, gruesome, awful way to be executed. And the name implies what it is that whoever the accused was put to death by a thousand cuts until the person finally expires. And so it's reserved for the most heinous of crimes, and eventually it was outlawed. But it was death by a thousand cuts. We are in a long-term misery, and so each cut adds to it, but then we adapt, sort of, and we go on about our business. And see, I want to adapt it to our current state, and that is grief by a thousand losses. We have had lots and lots of losses over the last year, 11 months. I mean, we wouldn't start the clock back in January, but it started hitting our radar at the end of February, began to raise to a crescendo, and then hit the full big bogey on the radar was in the middle of March. And then everything happened, and we began losing things. Now, some people would say we've lost liberties, you know, and we've restrained, and we have been constrained in order to do a variety of things, from flattening the curve to creating a cure to preventing other people from dying, any number of things that are very much a part of that. And we end up having to make a calculation about what we will trade in those terms. So where we are right now is it seems that we're in the midst of another surge, which brings all of these things to the forefront. And it feels a little bit like the noose is tightening, doesn't it? I mean, there are a variety of personal responses to this thing that is draining. You know, some people are turning it into a debate about personal freedom. Some are, dutifully abiding by every regulation that comes out. And some, which is probably the bigger portion of people, which may be part of the problem that we're contending with, are just simply apathetic about almost all of it. But the rise that's going on is seemingly with the cases that we have is commensurate with the escalation of personal anxiety about the threat of infection. And it triggers all sorts of things in us that usually is not real healthy. So I've already done an episode on all that we've lost, but we're in the middle of this. And I think what I want to reflect on a little bit is just the hidden cost that we maybe haven't counted, and what begins to now show its ugly head again, which is where this phrase actually comes into play, because we have been accumulating the cuts, if you will, of living under this pandemic. And falsely, we've built these expectations around it ending sooner than it currently is. And because of that, then we're stuck. We're paying, you know, we're leaning into this will all be over soon. We can live in our nice little kind of idealistic denial state, and it will get restored, and then everything will be good, right? But let me walk through just a few. I'm not going to go through an exhaustive list. I can't come up with one, but the things that we have lost or continue to lose. So, like the continuation of our personal restrictions, wearing a mask everywhere, all of that. I mean, fights are breaking out in a variety of places. I even saw that some pretty terse words were being exchanged on the floor of the Senate, supposedly the most deliberative body in human history and known for its convention. And that broke out. And we're also having to deal with the loss of our unfounded expectations, which is what they were, but we didn't know that. And then they weren't met. And now it begins to take a toll on us, another cut of sorts. And as I have said many times before on this podcast and in my classes, is a lot of times we don't know that we have the expectations until they go unmet. And this seems to be a point in time where we're being reminded that we actually had some, and now they're not getting met, and disappointment sets in, and anger sets in, and resentment sets in. Another thing we've lost is even the willingness to invest in what I would call flourishing activities, like retreats in everyday life, and we've just kind of settled into just getting by or focusing only on survival, whatever it takes to get me to the next day, that's good enough. I don't have any bandwidth to go much further. I'm just going to get through tomorrow and that's it. And so we forfeit and let go of creating margin in our lives or taking time to recharge or dealing with our fatigue and our weariness or our loss of perspective. All of those things are part of the losses, the thousand losses that I'm referring to in the overarching sense of grief that we're experiencing. A couple other things that come to mind. First is the loss of face-to-face versus screen-to-screen, or the loss of presence versus somebody's portrait or picture on a screen. See, there's something that is very powerful, and I would suggest even potentially healing, in the presence of another human who is there with us. And the problem is all of that creates a continued expenditure of emotional resources to remain connected through a screen versus remaining connected through personal connection of our senses, the visual, the environmental, in terms of sounds and places, the auditory, what we hear, the olfactory, all the things we smell, the touch, something as simple as a hand on a shoulder, all of those things take their toll in their absence. I have heard people say, you know, one person or another finally just kind of breaks loose and says, I've got to give you a hug. And they give a hug and it's like, I don't know how long it's been since I've been touched. And those things take their toll. It's a death by a thousand cuts or grief by a thousand losses. And what it's resulted in is irritation and anger, depression, anxiety. Oftentimes there's an increasing level of fear and people making decisions based on how do I reduce a little bit of this fear. And what it results in even further is a commitment to eliminate all risk, not just some, because we live with risk all the time. You know, I walk down a set of stairs and I'm taking a risk. Now, we don't think about it that way because we think about our overall ability to manage the world that we're living in. But we don't live with risk. We just want to eliminate all risk. And that's the context in which we're operating as well. Finally, and not the least of which, is the commitment to control what we can and cursing that which we can't. And that comes into play as well. It makes us irritable and it makes us resentful and it tempts us into seeing people as objects that are getting in our way rather than people that we know. And so where does this leave us? I inevitably come to, all right, so what? You know, now that you've full, full, you know, completely and irrevocably burst my denial bubble, thanks a lot, and, you know, unveiled, you know, the real world, because I was really happy in the Matrix. So now that you've revealed that, now what? And the challenge is how do we go about investing in flourishing activities or building the resources when we can? And one thing I would point to is something that I said a little bit earlier, and that is, how do I gain retreats in everyday life? Like something as simple, and I know most people will listen to me say this and say, you've got to be kidding me. Really? Something as minor as that can't possibly make any difference. And here it is. You ready? Slowing down as you walk. Because as we slow down our pace, we slow down a lot more than that, oftentimes. Because our pace betrays the things that we are trying to outrun, or maybe even the things we're trying to pursue. So slowing down the pace of how we walk, or reminding ourselves that we're not wasting time when we take time to do something completely mindless. You know, it never oftentimes occurs to us, and if it does, we usually feel guilty about it, is that my mind actually might need a break and some relief. Which leads me to an even bigger one in terms of the so what, and that is redoubling my efforts to figure out how to live graciously with myself and my limitations. Because our temptation is to keep expectations and keep the drive going as if nothing has ever happened. And there's a cost to that as well, because I'm trying to run a race with my feet tied and expecting myself to still do it at the same pace as I did when I didn't have my feet tied. The last one I want to highlight is in the so what category is acceptance, which I know, I am sure, that the minute I say that, some people out there, their eyes will roll and say, you are so naive, you can't possibly expect me to accept the way things are, because they are completely unacceptable. I get that. I understand that. But then the question has to come, if they are so unacceptable and you continue on the pace and on the strategies you're using to reject the reality of what it is, the question would be, how's that working for you? How's that working for you? And most people will say to me when I ask that question, most of the time is, well, it's not. But then the obvious follow-up question is, why keep doing it? But the reality is that we usually do things that work for us. Now, they may not work well. They may not work toward healthy behavior, or they may not work in some other standard, but I need to evaluate it in light of how I'm operating now. And my behavior betrays my belief. For a lot of people, they believe that accepting reality results in resignation, and then they remain stuck and they can't get out of it. But I would suggest to you that accepting reality doesn't necessarily result in resignation. Actually, it allows us to think clearly about the way things really are and planning accordingly, rather than not how we wish they were or how we demand them to be. Because I can beat my head against that wall all I want. The wall won't care, and I'll only have a bloody head. So I can't change, or I won't adapt to that which I won't accept. And again, most of the time we confuse acceptance with I'm condoning, I'm saying it's okay. None of those. It's not any of that. And that conversation is a difficult one. It shoots through pretty much all of our existence and our relationships. How often have you had a difficult relationship with somebody because you refuse to accept how they really are right now? Not how they could be, not how they should be, not the potential that exists, but how they are right now. And we refuse to accept it because we don't want to accept it, bottom line, because if we accept it, it won't change. But it's not about it not changing. It is about me changing, about me taking ownership of my own heart and how I'm going to handle that. So accepting it and acceptance is actually a pathway to better adaptation, potentially better flourishing, and it puts us in a position where we could actually might actually be able to find other people who are trying to accept reality as it is, not as they would have it. And then we can put together some times to sit outside, of course, with social distancing and masks if necessary, and hang out and talk about it. Maybe even vent about it, because venting is literally venting the system so that I can get some perspective back. And too often we're around people who take our venting as if it is an absolute irrevocable truth, instead of it's me trying to vent my system, my emotional system, from the poison that's in there, and they just need to listen and let it roll. And then we can get back to brainstorming and figuring out a way to adapt in some kind of healthy fashion. But I usually can't get to that brainstorm process or the problem-solving process until I vent my frustration and my irritation and my despair over what's actually going on. Let me give you a really good example, actually. And it's from the Bible. It's the book of Job. And there's a good portion of Job, that book, that is nothing more than, not to reduce it, but nothing more than a long, prolonged vent by Job about the situation he is in, and he does everything that we tend to do, including attributing the kind of motives God has, including demanding an audience with God so that I can finally change his mind about how bad things are and get his act together so that finally I can get my life back in order again. And the interesting thing about that is that a lot of times we have friends just like Job does. And usually they're the ones that say, hey, quit your crabbing. I could use another word, but I won't. Quit your grousing and complaining and crabbing about it. You must have done something really bad in order for God to do this kind of thing to you. So get over yourself, pull yourself up, obey God's law, and everything will be cool. Now there's a friend I can live with. Versus a friend that says, yeah, it kind of sucks. It really does suck. It's bad. It's awful. So what else? Tell me more of the story. Tell me more of how much your heart breaks. And in Job's case, how much your heart breaks over losing your family, or your wife telling you to just give up and die, or feeling like you've been abandoned by God. All of those things. Those are hard to hear. At the same time, we need some kind of gracious place to unload those things so that then I can turn my attention and my heart toward what's my next steps. And maybe they're going to be baby steps, but it doesn't matter. It's just the next steps. So, in a short way of saying it, we're in a heap of hurt. We are. Because we're in it again, it seems like, and we're back to this thing again. And my challenge, maybe even my invitation, is to find safe people to vent with over the frustration. And then and only then can you begin to troubleshoot, maybe problem solve the kinds of things we can do in the context of the way things are, not as we have want them to be, in the context of the way things are, to do the best with what I have and accepting that as a reasonable adaptation for the times that I'm in. And that allows me the capacity then to not only care for myself, which is what I'm referring to as flourishing, but also even have the resources to be able to walk alongside other people that are doing something like this. And that's the key. That is the key, is that a shared burden is a lighter one. Now, when I say that, it doesn't mean that a shared burden is a removed burden. It doesn't mean that at all. A lot of times we think, I'll share a burden and it will go away, or somebody will have a solution, or somebody will be able to do something to make this all go away. But that sets us up, and it sets the other person up to be and do something that they can't possibly do. So where do I start, and how do I start? And that's how we begin the process of recovering from the thousand losses that we've experienced over this last year. And it's come in short order, very quickly, when you think about it, March to the end of this year. So, you know, the third month to the 12th month, 9 months. And ironically, of course, a baby is born after 9 months. The question is what will be born on January 1st, 2021 in our own hearts? And how do we share our hearts in such a way that we can lance some of this poison that's been building up within us and then walk with others so that we can begin to adapt in a healthy way and even walk with others as they do the same? So there you have it. There's a lot there. I know there is a lot there. This has really been kind of busting the seams of my thoughts on the way that we address or walk into this. And I know it's far from easy. I get it. I understand it entirely. At the same time, where do we go next, and what kinds of ways that we can do this? And like I said, I think it always starts with finding the safe people that will let us vent out this system of all the things that have been building up within us, and the things that we've lost, and the things that we are disappointed by, and all of that sort of thing, and then be able to turn our attention to what's next and how and what are the steps I can take. So there you have it. That's it for tonight. Just a few reminders, program reminders. I've got some exciting news to share. Before I do that, let me mention just subscribing on the website. You can follow us on the website. Go to drmitch.com, M-I-T-S-C-H. And in the upper right-hand corner, you can subscribe to the website. So anything new material or anything that shows up on the website, you'll be notified of, and you can come back and check it out. Or you can subscribe to the podcast at raymitch.podbean.com. And that's another place to do that. You can subscribe. There's a player there if you want to download it. The really, really exciting news is that I am starting to take advantage of social media. So we can be found in Instagram at The Psych Monologues, all lowercase, one word. Monologues is spelled M-O-N-O-L-O-G-U-E-S. And on Twitter at Ray Mitch. And the drum roll, please. Now we are available on Spotify, on Stitcher. Oh my gosh, I can't believe it. It's too late. Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, of course, Podbean, and then also Amazon Music. So you can actually introduce me and Alexa if you want to do that, whatever that works out to be. So those are, I'm pretty excited to be able to have that access to introduce people to the various things that we talk about on the podcast and other mischief that I can find myself into in terms of talking about. The last thing I want to mention, as I've mentioned each time, I will continue to, is that if the things that we're talking about is kind of get your heart beating a little faster and you say, hey, I like this, I want to be able to partner with us. One of the primary purposes or funnels, if you will, that the podcast is for is to bring awareness to continuing to grow our scholarship fund for the CCU Silent Retreats. It's a unique opportunity for college students to experience spiritual formation in a very different way than they're accustomed. If you're interested, go to the website, drmitch.com, go to the tab that says CCU, drop down menu to the CCU Silent Retreats, and you'll see what they're really all about. And there's a GoFundMe site, and if you feel so moved to support the scholarship fund, it makes it possible for a CCU student to afford going to one of these retreats. We have one in the spring coming up in April 8th through the 11th, 2021. We have another one in the fall, and they basically fall every, no pun intended, of course, but they fall every fall and every spring. And that's an opportunity for students to engage 2.5-3 days of silence and solitude, but also interacting in community to understand what God's up to in their lives and how he's speaking into their lives. It's a unique opportunity. That's all I can say. You can find out more about it on the website. So, wow, that's a lot for the end. Join us on any of the social media platforms that we have if you want highlights and other things. You know, obviously follow us on any one of those channels, and we look forward, or I look forward certainly, to doing this again next week. As always, love ya. Later. Bye.